Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another awesome episode of the Biff Bites podcast. I'm your host, Jerry Mee, joined as always by my wonderful co-host, Mr. Adam Scheer. How's it going, Adam?
Doing well, Jerry. Back in the USA after a really awesome family vacay.
Yeah. And
we were chatting about it, and it was the kernel of an idea for this episode. So I'm excited to share a little bit about our experience over in Iceland.
I know. Yeah. You just had a family vacation, went over to, the closest part of Europe you get. You just love the USA so much. You didn't want to be too far away. So the furthest
it's so out true. Is. we landed and there's been a volcano erupting, and it was a trip, man. Just a lot of fun for the family too. It was surprisingly a really family friendly experience. And I think it was mostly because the kids were excited about the volcanoes and they were excited about the mountains and those awesome Icelandic horses that never leave the island and seem to be just everywhere you look. So they had a good time. We had a good time. But it was another instance where as much as I try to take a break from the CFP stuff, it manages to creep its way back into the forefront. And that was the idea for this episode here on currency exchanges.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a great topic to get into. It's one I don't think we've ever spoken about before on the podcast, which is surprising. We've been going for 4 years now, 3 years now. So we've done a lot of topics and a lot of episodes, but this will be the first ever currency episode. And yeah, your trip was a great impetus. And yeah, you have some kind of real world examples that we wanted to dive into before, I bore people to death with the technical stuff.
Well, just before we even get into that, this has been one of those tricky subjects that I know that you've worked closely with students in the Biff Review and in your tutoring. And I mean, we've always turned to you anytime one of these currency exchange types of situations come up. So I'm excited for you to share that with the broader audience out there in the CFP world.
Yeah, because there's a lot of interesting stuff that goes with currency exchange. I think kind of hedging is like the peanut butter to the jelly of currency exchange. Whenever you kind of see, sovereign nation money changing, price fluctuation, people want to prepare for those fluctuations. So it gets into a lot of hedging questions. But at its core, it kind of reminds me of options a little bit in that it can kind of be the opposite of what you expect. And so people get turned around in their brain and they'll do the math correctly, but they'll do it in the complete opposite direction. And so they get the completely wrong answer. And at its core, currency exchange really just, it requires you to take a step back and think logically what is actually happening here. And if you can do that, then everything else about currency exchange questions will fall into place and will kind of seem much easier in comparison. So we're going to try and get into that a little bit to maybe help our students and listeners out so that if they do get a currency exchange question on their exam, it'll just be an easy points slam dunk.
Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. Well, I think we talked about just me kicking things off here with sharing just like two moments during my trip with the family where I actually dropped back into CFP brain and thought, rather than ballparking this for the rest of the trip, let's actually just use the math that we're familiar with and know exactly what we're paying out, right? So one of the things I think with various currencies around the world is that I think here in the US, it's when you look at the euro, for example, right? It's close enough to like the dollar so that you could almost ballpark it. We don't advise students do this, but you could almost ballpark it, right? So one US dollar is worth, X euro. And it's like ballpark. But the thing with the Icelandic kroner is that one US dollar was 0.0072 Icelandic kroners. So yeah. It was a little bit more challenging to ballpark. And really, when you step in there, you're in a different country and all of the price tags are obviously in their currency, right? Some of them, when you go to the duty-free shops in the airports, are kind enough to do all of the currency translations for you. They have these fancy digital price tags now where I guess as the currencies fluctuate, so do the prices change.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Which is really cool, yeah. But if you're just in your shop going for t-shirts or jewelry like my kids wanted to get and little trinkets, it was all in Icelandic kroner. So very simple, right? We knew that we started with the home currency and we knew what the exchange rate was to translate that into kroner.
Mm-hmm.
And that was 0.0072. By the end of our trip, it went up to 0.0073. So, you know, big savings to be had there. But it was a simple calculation. We just took the price in kroners and we multiplied it by that factor, that 0.0072. And then we had our amount in US dollars and we're able to make sense of it. And I mean, you get a real feel for it once you're there for 3 or 4 days. You kind of know, all right, if it's around this area, we're looking at X amount of dollars. But I think one of the interesting things is when you're traveling, my wife and I were super excited about the airfare that we paid. There's a direct flight that goes from Newburgh, New York to Iceland. It's the only international flight out of this tiny little airport in Newburgh, New York, in upstate New York. And got a great price there. We used Airbnbs. It's off season for tourists there. We got a ton of deals there. And it's just funny how this thing that you know is going to be present with the currency exchange can really change the overall pricing of your trip. And Iceland being an island nation, lower population, you know, as far as what they're able to create on the island, they have greenhouses for their produce. And then they have cows and sheep and fish. And they have to import everything, and it's generally pretty expensive.
Yeah.
But that was really proven out when you started doing the currency exchanges and you saw, okay, well, our average meal in US dollars per person is probably anywhere from 28 to 32 per person. So we knew that if we were going to have a sit down meal, it was going to be about that amount. So it got to the point where my kids, who are age 11 and 8, were even able to take our iPhones and do the calculation themselves. You know, they were able to convert into US dollars. Pretty straightforward. So that's just the simple arithmetic of it. You take the exchange rate from the home currency to the foreign currency. Then you can safely and comfortably take the foreign currency amount, multiply it by that factor, and then you can translate it back into your home currency. So that was straightforward, and we got a good feel for it. The second different instance happened later in the trip, where my kids had saved up some money individually for this trip that they wanted to use, and they had US dollars. So they wanted to know, if I have saved up $50, what do I need to see on the price tag in Icelandic kroner to know that I have enough?
Oh, that's like a tailor-made CFP question, right?
So we use the other arithmetic. And I mean, again, they're able to use the calculator to do this as well, but we just had to set up the equation differently. So now what we're trying to solve for is not US dollars. We're trying to solve for Icelandic kroner. Pretty straightforward math. You just take the US dollar amount and you divide it by that currency exchange factor. So we divided it by the 0.0072. And we were able to say, all right, if you're going to get $50, it's going to be 6,800 Icelandic kroner, give or take. And they got a kick out of going to an Icelandic ATM and getting the physical currency and looking at it. And they bought some gifts to take home for themselves, but they saved some currency as well. But that's how they knew, you know, it was a one-to-one. It's like, all right, we have these bills. This is what this country has. Here's how we figure out how to take what we have and turn it into what they have here. So it's balanced. So yeah, that was the idea for this episode. And I figure it was a good segue into the more technical side that I know you're really well versed in, Jerry.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think you handled it great with the kids. For me, what usually tends to be the clicking point for a lot of students, but just as kind of that aha moment, is you're actually buying the currency. You know, think of the currency you're trying to exchange into as an asset itself that you can purchase. And this all starts to make sense. So I actually just pulled up. So right now, as of April 17th, the exchange rate is one US dollar equals 141.44 Icelandic krona. Mm-hmm. And the way to think about that is that if you wanted to buy Icelandic krona, like pretend there's just a big market where they're buying and selling exchange rates, and that market does exist, you know, it's on a very local level, you could just go to your local bank and do this, but it's also just the global currency market. You could go out there and say, hey, I have a trip to Iceland coming up. I want to stock up on some Icelandic money so that I have it. I don't have to be going to the ATM all the time or what have you. And I just want to buy a bunch of Icelandic krona. Well, you could get 141.44 Icelandic krona for a single dollar. You know, think of it like a bushel of apples. You know, you could get 141 apples for $1.
Yeah.
So when you think about it that way, the conversion is like very simple when you put it as like a physical asset that you're buying. And now that you've converted that one US dollar into 141 Icelandic krona, well, now, you know, you would just treat it as if it was doing with currency at your home. When you go to the market, when, you know, you go to the shop, you're looking something, okay, can I buy this? Well, I have 141 krona in my pocket. I can afford 141 Icelandic krona valued item. And once you're converted, it's very straightforward. So I like to tell students to kind of take these things in steps.
Mm-hmm.
Do the currency exchange, you know, purchase that foreign currency with the US dollar. Okay, now you have your foreign currency, treat it and spend it as if it was any other, you know, your home currency. Now you have your item. And then usually what they'll do is to kind of come back is, okay, now we need to sell the foreign currency when it's time to come back to our home country. And I actually kind of have a example question that we can get into.
All right. Yeah, let's go for it.
Because it also goes hand in hand with hedging. Because, yes, you could just kind of accept whatever the exchange rate is. But when you're talking about companies and very, very large dollar amounts, you start to want to do a little bit of hedging to make sure that you don't get screwed on fluctuating exchange rates. So Ford, the car company, sells many new pickup trucks in England for £50,000. Now, take, you know, they're selling pickup trucks in England. They're going to sell it for the local exchange, mm-hmm. The local yep. currency. At the start of the year, when the exchange rate is $1 to $1. So nice and easy, straight yep. across the board.
Perfect.
Over the course of the year, the dollar appreciates until by the end of the year, the new exchange rate is $1 to £2. And right there, I just want to take a minute there. That's a part where a lot of people get tripped up and confused is, oh, the dollar's appreciating. That means I get more dollars, right? And then they look at the exchange rate, $1 to £2, and they're like, that doesn't make sense. That looks like it's depreciating. I'm getting less dollars. But, you know, it's not just a case of big number better is where
yeah,
I think,
yeah.
you know, our people's lizard brains kind of yep. kick in situations like that. And they go, I want the bigger number. No, you actually, this is an example of appreciation because remember going back to what I said about you're buying the currency. Well, if $1 bought 1 euro, you know, I always say switch it out with like an apple to you know, solidify it in your mind. $1 bought one apple.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 1 year later, $1 buys two apples. Our dollar is twice as valuable. That's what's going on. Our $1 is now buying 2 pounds. The dollar has appreciated. So based on that information that I just read off, what should Ford have done if they predicted this would happen?
Mm-hmm.
Is it either A, do nothing, they just doubled their money, they're very happy?
Mm-hmm.
Is it B, sell short the US dollar? Is it C, short the British pound? Or D, buy the British pound on the London Exchange? So we can go through these, you know, each one and kind of talk
Yeah,
about
let's do it.
what's going on here. So first off, do nothing. They just doubled their money. Are they happy? So is that actually true? You know, remember, put stuff that lizard brain down. You know, big number, not always better. they didn't really double their money. They have their money. So just like I said, you know, $1 now buys 2 apples. If we're the apple seller, we're kind of upset about that, you know, because now we're getting half as many dollars as we got at the beginning of the year. So Ford definitely doesn't want to do nothing in this situation because they sold all of these pickup trucks for 50,000 pounds each, and they are expecting to turn that 50,000 pounds into 50,000 US dollars because Ford's a US company. They want to repatriate that money back into their home currency. And they can't do that because the exchange rate has moved against them. Now, that 50,000 pound pickup truck in sold in England is now only worth $25,000 in the US when they bring that money back home. So they don't want to do nothing because they just lost half their value right there.
Mm-hmm.
B is short the US dollar. Well, you know, when we short something, we're expecting it to go down in value. You know, that's what shorting is all about. And that wouldn't be the correct answer here either, because, you know, the US dollar isn't going down in value. The US dollar has gone up in value. It's appreciated. So if we short the US dollar, we're not making any money there. That contract's going to expire worthless because the dollar has not gone down. It's gone up in price. So logically, I'm sure you can kind of guess that the correct answer now is short the British pound. You know, the British pound has gone down in value. It's depreciated. We short the British pound. We lose money on the British pound in the conversion. But as long as we structure our, you know, futures contracts correctly, we make money on the British pound side. But then finally, you know, buy the British pound on the London Exchange. That one is incorrect because, you know, does Ford need more British pounds? You know, no, that's just going to exasperate their issue. They already have a ton of British pounds from all of these pickup trucks that they've sold. They're trying to get rid of it. You know, they want to get rid of the British pound and they want to turn it into the US dollar. So buying the pound on the exchange is not going to help them at all because they're in the opposite boat. They're trying to sell the British pound. They're trying to get it out of their inventories. So
that's a great question.
Yeah. And I really like this question because it shows a lot of aspects of it. You know, the whole, you know, big number, not always good.
Mm-hmm.
All the way down to, you know, converting and hedging and futures contracts and, you know, really kind of dips its toes into the more advanced level questions that you might not necessarily get on the exam because, you know, there are only so many questions that are can be given to you. But there is a very real possibility that you could get a question very much like this on your exam.
Yeah, I'd say so. The way that that is set up, it not only tests your core understanding of exchanges, but it's that action, the action that follows. Is the action the right fit given what's happening with the exchange? That's a very, very, very CFP exam-like situation where it's not just about, can you convert? Well, what do you do after that? What's the right action given those facts that are in the question? So that's a great one that you shared there.
Yeah. So really, I would say just kind of practice these. I do think you just need to start forming those pathway connections in your brain, get those neuron bridges built up because it is very confusing. I'm sure a lot of you guys listening, your eyes might have glazed over while I was going over that question. I get it. That happens. But if you practice this, if you do a couple of these questions, it does start clicking and making sense, and you kind of start seeing the code of the matrix
Oh yeah.
as you look at these types of questions.
I would say that this is one of those concepts, much like like-kind exchanges, where you would really benefit and almost have to write it out. I would get so nervous if your de facto here is to do the math in your head. I think it helps so much. Even that visual of I have $1, I get 1 pound, right? Now I have $1, and then I would get 2 pounds for that. I think visually it tells a story that's even that can get up against that lizard brain, bigger number, always better type of thing. That's at least how I would have approached a situation like this one.
Yeah, 100%. And I actually have another question here I have my solution written out, and that's exactly what I would do is take it
Nice.
step by step, write out exactly what's happening. So
Yeah.
let's kind of dive into this. There's gonna be a little bit of math here, guys, but we're gonna keep it simple. So if you're driving, you don't have to worry about scratching anything out on a notepad. But so Fabulous Freddy invests $10,000 in Louis Vuitton on the French exchange. When the exchange rate is 90 cent euro to $1, Louis Vuitton increases in value by 50% by the end of the year. Fabulous Freddy then sells the Louis Vuitton stock when the exchange rate is €1.20 to the US dollar. How many US dollars will he receive? Well, okay. First thing we're going to want to do is just take that 10,000 US dollars that he has at the beginning of the year and convert it to to euros. So step one, take that 10,000 initial investment, and kind of like what you were saying at the beginning of the episode, Adam, you just multiply it by the exchange rate. So $10,000 times 0.9, because it's 90 cent euro to the dollar at the beginning of the year, that gives us 9,000 euros. We took 10,000 US dollars and we bought, a bushel of 9,000 apples, the euro variety of the apples. Now, over the course of the year, that $9,000 appreciated, the Louis Vuitton stock appreciated on the market by 50%. So same way we would solve it if it was a home stock in our home currency, we just take that $9,000, multiply it by 1.5 to show the 50% increase. So now we have 13,500 euros. And now it's the end of the year. We're looking to repatriate that money. We're looking to bring it back. Same exact thing you said. Okay, now we're going in the reverse direction. Instead of multiplying it by the exchange rate, we are going to divide it by the exchange rate. So we take that 13,500 and we divide it by 1.2 in order to get our US dollar value of $11,250. Step one, step two, step three. It's that simple, exactly like that.
Yeah, good
Now,
breakdown there.
this is a pretty straightforward one. I will caution people to be on the lookout. We know the CFP board loves throwing monkey wrenches in their questions. They love tripping people up and confusing them. Be careful that they don't change the wording on the secondary exchange rate for you. And what I mean by that is, so it's sell he sells the Louis Vuitton stock when the exchange rate is 120 euro to the dollar, and then at the beginning of the question he buys when the exchange rate is 90 cent euro to the dollar. Both of those exchange rates are phrased the same way. We're going euro to dollar, euro to dollar. Be careful on the wording that they don't do euro to dollar at the beginning and then switch up the wording and do dollar to euro at the end. Because if they do that, you're gonna have to change your math. You're gonna have to, multiply it both ways in order to get the correct answer. So just be very, very cautious, be very cognizant of how they actually word the exchange rate. Make sure that they're not switching the directions on you, because then it's not, don't just go on autopilot and do multiply, then divide.
So this is yet another example of RTFQ slowly and carefully and completely.
Just take your time on these. Really logic it out. These are probably questions that you're going to go over the 2 minute average allotted time. And that's okay. We talked about it before. Just bank that time on other easier questions. And it's okay to kind of spend a little bit of extra time working a currency exchange question to make sure you get it right. I'm going to spend more than 2 minutes on these questions because even though I know how to do this stuff, I work with it a lot, I still need to be careful because little subtle changes in language can completely change the answer.
Yeah, and good practice for this could be bringing it to the real world. Jerry was able to call up some exchange rates right as we're recording here. Go to different countries, plan a trip to a different country and see what the cost of the airfare would be in US dollars, and then convert it to the foreign currency in the country you're traveling to. And just apply this stuff, because I do feel across the board in CFP world, the more real world you make it, the more connection there is. And it's not like you can comfortably, maybe you could. I don't know if it'd be good for your study plan, but I don't know if you could just pick up and travel to Spain, on a whim during your CFP studies.
Spain has great exchange rates, by the way. Last time I was there.
Maybe you could. There might be some good, focused study time where you're on, 6.5 hour flight. But yeah, try that out in the real world. See what different goods would cost in different currencies. And yeah, I think the application piece, it's one of those with practice, it really does click. And I think the way that you described it, Jerry, of your buying the currency, that's such a basic thing that goes unsaid in all of this. I feel like so many different places dive right into the conversion technical side, and it leaves a lot of students wondering, well, what, wait, whoa, what am I supposed to be doing? Wait, where do I put this number? And that basic thing, I think, really, as you were talking through your examples, I kept on reminding myself, all we're doing is we're buying the other currency. That's it. We're just buying the other currency. And it really does actually help you to internally feel like, all right, I know which direction this is going. I can feel which direction this is going because I'm buying the currency, rather than, oh, it's a bigger number. Yeah, it's gonna go, I think it'll go this way. This is close enough. Put those skills to work, and get yourself to the correct answer.
And once you understand that you're buying the currency, a lot of the macro economic factors start falling in place. So we didn't really touch on this, but a really common factor in the global markets is countries will sometimes purposefully devalue their currency as a way to boost their, home industries. It's kind of like a reverse tariff. China is very famous for doing this. There's all sorts of international treaties. Countries saying that they won't intentionally devalue their currency because otherwise it becomes a race to the bottom. But China kind of still does it and has been sanctioned a couple times in the past. But what they do is they purposefully devalue their currency because it then makes their currency cheaper for other countries to buy. And when that happens, people then spend more money in that country. Just like you were saying with your kids, it's like, oh, the currency is devalued. Everything, see, it seems so much cheaper. I can get stuff. I become an instant millionaire by converting my money from the US to Iceland
Sure. Yeah.
because of the exchange rate. And so people see that and they psychologically they spend more. And that's exactly what these countries are doing. They're devaluing their money so that all these foreign international buyers will come to them and buy stuff, which in turn boosts their internal economy. And yes, it makes their currency weaker on the international markets, but they don't care about that. They care about all this inflow of foreign currency. And that's really what international trade is all about in all these treaties. It's balancing the flow of money, because when one country hoovers up all of these international dollars, it makes them very strong, and it makes the countries that are sending their money into that country weaker, and they don't like that, and so they put all these trade treaties in place, and ban countries from devaluing their currency in order to gain an unfair advantage.
Yeah, that's interesting. Whereas you think, all right, they're devaluing it. Why, if
Yeah,
you
we
look at
just li lizard brain again. It's like
the,
devalue bad, devalue bad.
it's
But
true.
sometimes it's good.
Yeah, that's it does remind me of a part of our trip of sort of tangentially related, but the what I'm sure you see in some countries out there is there are tax refunds available if you purchase goods over a certain amount in the country. And it's again, it's all to create some stimulation of travelers coming into the country and spending money, right? It's like, oh, well, I'm going to get this refund. And I think from the moment you step into the country, you see this tax refund booth and you look a little closer at the fine print and they say, before you go back home, bring your receipts and we'll transfer over a refund for any goods that you purchased over a certain amount that are verified. But it's the same idea. It's all about flow of money into the economy. Now, what's interesting with that is I wonder how many travelers are diligent about, keeping those all in the right place. And another element, at least in Iceland, was you had to be prepared to provide the tax person with the goods. You had to actually show them that, oh yeah, I bought this coat. Like my
Yeah.
wife bought a coat. My wife's coat broke before we went to Iceland and she bought an Icelandic coat, right?
Iceland,
So
famously warm. Famously
famously,
warm.
yeah, exactly. Which turned out to be a good thing. It's a really great coat, and we found a discount on it. But have we missed that, that slip in paper? I guess you're doing the same thing on the global markets. It's right, like here's this potential. We're gonna bring this down to stimulate inflows of cash flow. I mean, it's like that basic economic idea, right? You lower the costs, and more money could potentially come in. You get more buyers to go. So.
Yeah, and it works both ways too, because you're attracting those foreign dollars. So like you and your wife, you spent money in Iceland, you bought this,
Yep.
you brought money to Iceland. But on
Yes.
the flip side of the coin, it also retains local currency, because like how we said, international trade all about the balance of trade. You want more cash inflows than outflows. Well, how do you, so we talked about how to increase inflows. Now, how do we reduce outflows? You decentivize your native population from taking their money and spending it elsewhere overseas.
Yeah.
And devaluing your currency also helps with that, because if your currency is devalued on the international market, it's going to cost your local citizens more money to buy overseas. So if now let's say there's the bizarro world version of Adam and his wife, who are Icelandic natives, they love their fermented fish, and they're coming on a vacation, and they're going to go to the US, and this bizarro Adams, Mrs. Shear's coat breaks, and they come to America, and they go to buy a coat at Macy's or something like that, and they look at the price tag and they go, oof, this is a really, really expensive coat, because the Icelandic krona is devalued so much against the US dollar. You know what? I'm gonna pass. I'll just shiver a bit on this on this trip. I'll save that money. And it's decentivizing them from spending their money overseas, and that just means more money staying in country,
Sure.
boosting their own local economy.
Yeah. It's fascinating when you think about it, because so much of travel internationally is, I mean, being prepared, being on time, right? You have to get to the airport 3 hours before you go. Things are pretty regimented and you want to pack well and you want to be aware of costs, right? I mean, that's one of your first entry points is like, how much is this going to cost? I mean, for a family traveling, for individuals traveling too, right? How much are we going to lay out to have a vacation that is right for us? And it's so interesting that this underlying variable that's there is that if there is an exchange rate, you don't know where that's going to fluctuate while you're over there. I mean, you want to say, all right, it's going to be stable. We're dealing with, like, a big economy and things are okay in the global markets right now, but you really don't know. You don't know which way that's going to break. And it's just interesting that in this space where there's so much preparation and thought and trying to keep things like meticulous records and to pack well and all of this stuff and to get it in line, you have this outstanding, very important variable of we don't know where the conversion rate's going to fall while we're there and spending our money and needing to spend our money. It's not like we can go to the little US embassy and have some hamburgers and fries. That ain't happening.
Yep. And as much as we all do it on a personal level when we travel, think about it. International companies are doing the same exact thing every day on a
Oh,
massive scale. We're talking about a couple $1,000 vacation. When go back to Ford, they could be doing a $20 million exchange or even more, billions of dollars. So it just really multiplies it. And as much as you want to say, pinch pennies and make sure you're doing the right thing, I'm going to tell you, Apple and Ford and Coca-Cola, they're doing it even more because their 1% ends up equaling a hell of a lot more.
Sure. Yeah. Definitely does.
One other kind of fun anecdote to close the episode out is I've actually seen in this new age of kind of digital goods, pretty much all video games, movies, music, all of that stuff is all digital and downloadable now. And with that is also the rise of VPNs, which if you don't know what a VPN is, I don't want to get too much into it right now, but essentially what it does is it tricks your computer into thinking that you're somewhere else. And people do this for security, neither here nor there. But if you have a VPN, you can trick your computer into thinking that, I'm in Brazil or I'm in China. And so when you go to these various digital good websites, Steam for video games or, Apple for music and Amazon for digital movies, things like that. If you just have your normal purchase from your home, you have to pay in US dollars. And what a big trend is that people are doing is that they're using VPNs to trick their computers that they're in other countries with more favorable exchange rates. And buying these digital goods for massive discounts in those local currencies. So I know Brazil is a very popular one because the Brazilian currency is very weak against the US dollar right now. And so, these people will go, they'll flip a switch on their computer, make it look like they're in Rio, and then they'll buy all of these video games and movies and music for pennies on the dollar because of the exchange rate. And they just find that these people are doing and they're participating in currency exchange without even realizing it. They're becoming experts of the currency exchange, just unintentionally just trying to get some cheap movies.
That's interesting. I never would have considered that. I always thought, VPN for security, and you just log into it and it gets you secure. I didn't know that you can redirect it to different areas of the world. That's crazy.
Well, that's how the VPN makes you secure, is it's like, hey, I'm not here, I'm really over here. And it's kind of like masking you. It's hiding by making it look like you're somewhere where you're not. But the trade of that is if it makes it look like you're somewhere where you're not, you get all the benefits of that area that it's making it. The same thing with like Netflix. It's like, oh, I really want to watch this show, but it's not on the US Netflix, it's on the UK Netflix. Oh, well, turn
it.
my VPN on. Make my VPN think that I'm in London, and now all of a sudden I get to watch those shows on Netflix that
Wow,
are blocked in the US.
Yeah, very interesting.
But yeah, that kind of wraps it up. Definitely deeper we could get on currency exchange. This is certainly not an exhaustive list of all the ways the currency exchange are tested on, especially not when you start incorporating hedging into it as well. But this should give you a pretty solid foundation where when you see these types of questions in your review and your education books, hopefully these won't be as scary to come across. Now, if you just put that those simple steps into place like we talked about, take a step back, think about it logically, these should hopefully start to become very easy questions that you'll be happy to see on your test day.
Yeah, this will be a helpful one. Keep this episode on your list to come back to if you're studying for your CFP exam in advance of July or whenever you plan on sitting. And yeah, know that these, just like many concepts, I think the moment that you crack the code on it and the light bulb goes off, those are absolutely locked and loaded gettable points, assuming you read the question completely. So just keep reading closely, keep listening in, and just a reminder too to all the listeners out there, we've had some great recommendations from the listeners about topics that they were interested in hearing about, and feel free to send those in to our team because we'd love to hear from you, number one, and number two, we are very much interested in what's on the minds of the students that are preparing for their exam. As the date slowly rolls around. In fact, as we record this, we have a kickoff call coming up this week to start ramping up for July. So the cycle begins yet again. So if you are looking for a place to study and you feel like you enjoy what you hear on the podcast, be sure to give us a shout, give us a call. Keep us on your list of programs you're considering because we'd be happy to talk to you. Jerry teaches a whole lot in the program. I teach a whole lot. Mike teaches a whole lot. Brendan teaches. It's just well designed and it's really designed to keep the vibe of what we have here on the podcast, just informal but informative. So keep us in mind.
Yeah, definitely. I'd love to have you. I'd love to have you in class and you get all this live.
That's right.
All right. Well, that was a great episode, Adam, and I will see you next time.
Take care.